from MyDomain.com, this is Second Life, a podcast spotlighting women who have truly inspiring careers. We're talking about their work journeys, what they've learned from the process of setting aside their doubts or fears, and what happens when they embark on their second life. Today, I'm so thrilled to have not one, but two guests on the show, the dynamic duo of Emily Current and Merritt Elliott. They started out as stylists working with musicians and celebrities, and they still style Jessica Alba to this day. They also saw a hole in the market for vintage-inspired denim and ended up becoming designers with their first line, Current Elliott. For the record, if you've ever owned a pair of boyfriend jeans, it's because of Emily and Merritt. After leaving Current Elliott, they went on to launch their second incredible company called The Great, and as if this wasn't enough, they also started designing for interiors as well, with their exclusive Emily and Merritt home line at Pottery Barn, PB Teen, and Pottery Barn Kids. They do so many things, and they do them all so well. This is Emily Current and Merritt Elliott on Second Life. Okay, so let's get your backstory nailed down first. I know you guys met at UCLA, but how did you go from, like, being students and being friends to actually, like, working together?
Well, we certainly were friends in college and admired each other's personal style, and I think that from the beginning was a way that we connected with each other and found that we both had a love for vintage, and we took the bus down to the flea market and we shared our secrets and our hidden haunts to find things. And then just serendipitously sat next to each other at graduation. I should say we're seated next to each other at graduation. And we actually said, let's keep in touch, let's hang out, but like, let's work together one day. I think that we...
Were you guys planning on doing at that point?
I don't think we knew. I think we both had an entrepreneurial spirit, and we knew that we wanted to work in fashion in some way, and that we just knew that we wanted to do something together. And it was kind of arbitrary, but also kind of a secret pact that we were going to keep each other in mind as we went forward into our first jobs out of college.
So what did you guys first start doing?
We both worked in fashion. I started styling and doing certain visual merchandising and visuals for different companies around town. And I definitely sort of had the freelance bug.
You wanted to be your own boss.
I did. And Merritt and I really talked a lot during that time.
I was doing freelance writing for magazines, and I was an assistant over at Vogue. And got to participate in a lot of shoots and freelanced at Allure as well, and started styling as well for some freelance clients. And we would always call each other for advice because, of course, we were not seasoned at any of this, so we didn't really actually know the business part of it. So we kind of piecemealed our shared experiences at our jobs and put them together and figured it out. And this was before Google, so there's a lot of cold calling stores and studio services and all the friends who've done it before, and we just kind of figured it out.
And I remember when we joined forces, because I think I had got some type of shoot, but it was Misha Barton, like in the height of
OC fame.
OC, or right before, it was right in the beginning. And I called Merritt and was like, do you think I could get Chanel? which, by the way, we did.
Oh, answer but, yes.
But also, you know, I think we needed each other. And that was the moment where we were like, if we want to style, let's do this together. Let's make an alter ego and make one name. Because at the time, there really wasn't there weren't teams of stylists at the time. And
it used to be a very, like, single-person job. And I do think that's something for those of you who don't know. Now there are lots of stylist partners, it seems, or not lots. There are a handful. But you're right, to your point, that was not very common. So you guys were Maud, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Maud, like Harold and Maude, M-A-U-D-E. She was like an old granny who somehow styled celebrities all over town. but... You know, we created a book. I remember our book was hot pink. At the time, you didn't have a link to your
you had a portfolio.
You had an actual portfolio with actual pictures. And it was, you know, really expensive to make them. And you had to have multiple ones. And ours was hot pink leather. And in a sea of black portfolios, it was ridiculous. And we had, you know, pins and branding and postcards. And we just, like, went for it right away.
So you had Maud branding as stylists
right out of the gate. That's really interesting, don't you think?
Yeah, I think that we loved creating a brand for ourselves in order to create brands for other people and to let clients know that we were really sort of self-assured in ourselves and we had an aesthetic and that we were willing to form and that for other people, whether it be a brand or a new musician for a label, and that we had something to say as well as how to dress them and that we wanted to talk about them as a brand or a company holistically.
And have like a visual language for the entire experience.
Exactly.
Got it. Okay. So at what point did you guys realize like this is going to be our full-time gig? Are you still freelancing on the side? Because like when Catherine and I first started Who What Wear, she was all in, but I was still freelancing because I needed to keep myself in ramen. So I was still doing like a side hustle, writing for other magazines just to keep going. And it took a while before I realized like, okay, I can do this full-time. Were you guys all in right from the get-go or was it a ramp up?
It was a slower kind of transition into us being full time. But I remember the day that we both were like, quit doing anything else. It was full time starting this business. And I remember we did not have a job. And I remember like clicking my fingernails and being like, we made $0 today. And we got to get serious. And, you know, it clearly worked out okay. We got an agent and we started working a lot right away. And it was specifically in the music industry. Doing image development for new artists. And it was perfect for what we wanted because it wasn't so red carpet heavy and designer reliant that we were able to actually like thrift to find a lot of the stuff that we wanted to do and hodgepodge things together. But I do remember those first few weeks vividly of being afraid of what we had.
But to be fair, when she says we were made $0, it didn't mean we weren't working. Because I truly, and this is, let this be a lesson to anyone who wants to be an entrepreneur, you know, we did favors for friends. We, you know, asked to work on shoots, volunteered our time, our services, linked up with photographers, did test shoots. I mean, we were
hustling.
It wasn't just waiting for the phone to ring. We were reaching out to everyone we had met in the years before, people we didn't know, cold calling. I mean, we were hustling. We were working. We just weren't making money yet.
So tell me about those early days. So you're working with musicians primarily, and then this really allowed you to expand on your vintage knowledge and use all of these amazing pieces in your work. What were some of the challenges of doing that?
It was really a lot of scrapping things together, but that's really how we are today too. I mean, we really figure things out as we go and we don't follow the rules because we don't really know the rules and we just go and figure it out and ask and I'm not afraid. And yeah, I mean, we really focused on musicians in the beginning.
Tell me who. Is there anyone
well,
who...
yeah, I mean, Katy Perry was one of our first clients.
No way!
Yeah, and...
I've known you guys a million years. I had no idea.
Yeah, no, she was. And she was amazing because she was so interested in fashion and in persona, which was what was interesting to us. Fiona Apple, when she did Extraordinary Machine, was really exciting for us because, again, she loved vintage. She's vegan. She had a lot... There's a lot of rules about the way we needed to dress her, which was amazing because it allowed us, to get really creative and form relationships with Stella McCartney and designers that fell within her values. And it was just a really great experience.
Okay, so fast forward, it's 2008, and you guys decided to launch a collection, Current Elliott. I actually, in prepping for this, I went back and looked at the article I wrote about that very first collection, which is a great article.
Extraordinary.
It's one of our favorites ever written.
And I remember talking to Allie, who was doing PR for The Line at the time, and Jane Herman had the exclusive for Vogue, and Jane and I used to work at Elle, and I was pissed about it, but I was like, whatever, we'll be the first online, which didn't mean anything back then, but meant
very
now
much
it does.
Now it sure does. But I remember the fashion community, like, legitimately lost its mind over that collection. You started the boyfriend jean. Like, you were going to make a line that was going to, like, set everything on fire, that people were going to freak out.
No way.
Because how many pieces were in that initial collection?
There was 22 pieces.
I mean, that's insane.
Yeah.
It was like all hits.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was absolutely, again, us not knowing what we were doing and really just doing what felt right to us. And we had something to say in denim. I mean, at the time, it was like the lowest rise you've ever seen, bedazzled. The jeans were so fancy and so were the tops, and it didn't work together. And we just felt like there was something really missing in bottoms and in denim. And
oh, my God, that's right. It was like a Frankie B. world where it was like 1 inch above the pubic bone, if that.
Yeah.
And the lowest we were styling, you know, so many particular musicians where everyone wanted to look effortless. And there was a lot of excitement happening in tops and jackets. But to really balance it and needed for that high-low aesthetic that everyone wanted, we needed like a really casual jean, and it didn't exist. So we started collecting these vintage jeans. I mean, back from college, we still have those pairs. And we would bring them to the, you know, a special tailor would come in, and we would at the fittings have this pile of vintage jeans, and all these people would start wearing them. And then we would start getting calls like, you know, hey, so-and-so saw me wearing these jeans. Do you think that you could come and help them fit some jeans and find some good washes? So we knew that there was a hole in the market, and us being stylists on the front lines allowed us to know that first.
Because I think that you're in a really unique and amazing position. As a stylist, you're tasked with going out and finding all of the new lines, the best of what's out there, of like knowing everything on the market. And then you're essentially doing market research as well for your own line, because you're looking and seeing like where are the holes in the market. So it gives you a different insight rather than if you were just designing on your own, like in a vacuum.
Exactly.
Well, and that's something that even today we have to really focus on, is making sure you really have your eyes and ears on what's going on and what's missing. But yeah, I mean, it was really a remarkable time for us. I mean, I think it was very unexpected and very exciting and affirming that people liked what you were doing.
Got it. Okay, so I assume that when it was styling, it was the two of you, a handful of assistants, but essentially, like, you're still living in that freelance life. And then when you start a line and that line starts to grow, and then you're an entrepreneur, and then it starts to become part of a company, and you have to start hiring and dealing with, you know, more corporate things. How did you guys deal with that?
Depends on the day. It certainly was a sharp contrast to how we had been working independently before, but, you know, we never stopped thinking like a small business and like entrepreneurs and best friends who were just creating things out of love. We never lost focus of that.
We look at the time of creating Kern Elliott and growing that business as business school for us. And when
it's like a PhD, y'all. That's more than an MBA.
Like, we learned so much, and now looking at how we've built the great, we've really built it with the value system and with an ecosystem that we believe in. And you know, we had entered into a situation and an industry that was not. There was not a lot of women.
Yeah.
And there was definitely not a lot of young women in and out of laundries. And I mean, to be, you know, we didn't have a lot of cred at the time. I mean, and we did eventually because people saw the orders. But it was a learning experience for
because
us.
Because I just like to point out that for those of you who might not have as much insight into especially the fashion and denim industries, especially in LA, it's very masculine. It's like these old families. It's like it's not really necessarily, or at least it certainly wasn't in 2008, a place that was like, yes, young, talented women, come right in. We'll walk you right through it. So you guys really had to be pioneers as well.
Definitely. I don't think at the time we knew we had that responsibility, but we did. And, you know, and we had each other. So we would spend a lot of time in the car kind of figuring out life and what's the best way to communicate or handle this situation or move forward or do it better every single day. And are there, we had so many learnings from that. It's, we could write, you know, encyclopedia worth of learnings on that.
I look forward to that. Your thesis. Yeah. There you go. I look forward to reading that someday. So then in 2012, you decided to exit Kern Elliott and start working on different and new projects, which we will get to in a minute. I'm sure that was a hard decision to make because it was sort of your first project and first clothing apparel. How did you know it was time to cut the cord?
That's a great question.
Yeah, I mean, we knew.
You just knew.
We deeply knew it was time. We had a vision for what we wanted creatively to do. And I think we had a vision for what we wanted our work life and our non-work lives to look like. Mm-hmm. And we knew we could build that. We felt very confident that we could build it.
Was the Grate already up and running
in
your head?
In our minds, a multi-category collection was. And we knew that we would lose our last names, but we weren't going to lose our brains and our creativity and what we wanted to do. And we knew that there was something bubbling that was sort of bigger in our minds in terms of what categories we wanted to produce, what lifestyle brand we wanted to create, and how we wanted to grow it, and how we treated the people that worked for us. And I think we just knew it was time, and we had an ability to do that because the company was going to be bought by a private equity firm. So we actually had a moment where we could stop and say, we're going to exit.
And during the time at Kern Elliott, we never stopped styling.
That's a really good point. You always had another creative outlet going on.
Yeah, and we did other collaborations as Emily and Merritt, first with Kate Spade and then with Pottery Barn. And that allowed us to have confidence that we could have a point of view in other categories. And we knew we had more to say. So I think we knew that we always needed to keep fostering that spirit because – all good things come to an end.
Yeah. And it's good. It's like you always have like more than one plan going on at the same time. And that also, I think, it feeds inspiration. Like I always say, like when it comes to writing, like you have to go out and have a life because you don't know where your next great lead sentence is going to come from or your next idea if you're not, you know, exposing yourself to other books and magazines and literature and going to see bands and going to restaurants. Like you need to be a part of life to be able to put something out. And I think that's something that's so interesting about your creative process is that you have sort of like multiple spinning dervishes going at all times that feed into each other and support each other, which is cool.
It is actually interesting because we're very multifaceted in how we've approached our career. And I remember being young, like before I graduated college or high school, and thinking, unless you were a doctor or a lawyer, I had one path that you were a failure. I mean, in order to succeed, you needed to do one thing. And I think what we've really learned over the last, you know, few decades is
we do a lot.
We really do a lot. And those things allow us perspectives to grow other things. And I don't think that's a weakness. I think that's a strength. And I don't think we knew that when we started.
I do think that's sort of a little bit like we're all about the same age. And I do think that there's somewhat of a generational difference. Even I see, you know, sort of like girls 10 years younger, 5 years younger, they don't have that sense of like you have to, you know, we grew up watching our parents have single track careers and doing the same thing and doing different things was not considered, you know, something desirable. But now there is a sense of fluidity in terms of career where it's like, oh, you can be lots of different things. And that's actually a good thing. To that point, you guys left Kern Elliott and everything started up with Pottery Barn. So you're the only collaborators who have done collections with PB Teen, Pottery Barn Kids, and Pottery Barn, which is insane. And also, I have a ton of your stuff in Clark's room, just saying. But how did that first collaboration come about? And how did you know, yes, I want to work in this sort of like interiorist world and I have a sense of what to create? And how did you have the confidence to do that?
It just happened organically. They reached out to us and liked what we were doing and thought that we could provide an interesting fashion point of view into the home space. We started with teen. And we said yes because that's what we do, again, and didn't know what we were doing and Googled it and figured it out. So
but
we went away.
You don't have teenagers.
No, but we've
– You haven't been teens in a minute. No offense.
No, we haven't.
So how did you think like, yeah, we can tap into what teenage girls in Topeka want in their bedroom?
I guess we didn't overanalyze it
that
much.
I mean, we didn't overanalyze it. But the truth is that it has – you know, helped us create what Emily and Merritt brand is. And Emily and Merritt, between what we've done with Kate Spade and now expanded with Pottery Barn, it's who we were before we are now. It's these driven, smart young women who have, you know, really worked hard and to get where they need to go. And I think we could design for these people.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I think that we had a different point of view in the home space, particularly for teens, because we wanted to be inspiring to them and coming from a fashion point of view.
Okay, so you start working on that first collection for the teens. What were some of the key pieces where you realized you're like, this is going to be amazing and then saw it sell out immediately? Or did you have another thing where you're like, oh, everyone's going to love these, like this bunny alarm clock?
Yeah,
and then,
the bunny alarm clock was definitely.
The unicorn head that was like a gold unicorn bust, that one. I think the moment that we would create something and did the exercise, like, could this go in your office? Could this go in your dining room? Could this go in your kid's bedroom? Could this go in your bathroom? And if the answer is yes, and then it was a win. And I think we want and still create pieces that are like that and speak to people like us who, again, fluidity. And it's ageless. It's roomless. We're creative people. You can play and flex with how you decorate. And it is a reflection of your style. And that's how we shop and dress. And we mix and match and wear old things with new things and, you know, play with scale and whatnot. So,
I have to say, like, just talking about this, a unicorn head and a bunny clock, like, it's not serious. It was just a lighthearted, free experience to start. And it felt really good at the time.
I feel like that's like a sort of a little bit of a lifeline that you need when you're in a transitional moment, is to have something that's like such a no-brainer, such a good win, such a good fit, and that just feels rewarding. And then you're like, yeah, I remember why I'm doing this stuff in the first place.
Exactly.
One of the things I remember talking to you guys about with that collection very early on is this, you know, to your point, Merritt, this idea that, like, kids' rooms don't need to look kiddy, and that, like, a teenager doesn't want to look like a teen, and that she wants to be cool and she wants it to be a space that, you know, like, is just as cool as the rest of her family's home and all that. And I thought that was such a nice way of looking at teenagers and kids from this more adult perspective. Like, just because you're a kid doesn't, or a baby, doesn't mean you have to look like a box of crayons threw up on you. Like, your room can be, like, it doesn't have to look like it doesn't belong to the rest of the house. Yeah. And I thought that was such an unusual way of looking at it, and so cool at the same time.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the activity mat that we did that is black and white was such a hit because that stuff lives in your main living space. And I think parents are ready for some pretty stuff.
Well, and I don't need to tell this to you, but, you know, your home is a reflection of your style, just like how you dress. And the more that we have friends come over and host parties and stuff, you want all of that to reflect who you are, not just what's on your body. So, and we've seen that really change through the years. It felt very separate for a long time, and now all of a sudden it's the same space.
Yes, I agree. I think it was that thing that, like, even in my early 20s, like, thinking about your home space was just not even on the radar of something that was important. It was just outfits or like experiences, and now it's all part and parcel about, you know, it's self-identity in a different way. So at the same time you're doing all of these Pottery Barn, and I mean that, kids, teens, grown-ups, all of that stuff going on, you also are launching your second company, The Great. How did you go about doing that? And did it feel the same in the beginning just because it was small and the two of you building something? Did you start hiring right away? Like, how did you go about building The Great?
Just, we were humble about it. Like, there were parts of the business that were totally new to us. Certain hires, certain production processes, certain way of building the company that were the very unfun parts that had to be done.
Yeah.
And I think we surrounded ourselves with some smart people and got out our notebooks and figured it out, really.
I always think about the time when Catherine and I were hiring someone to oversee operations, and we had to ask other friends what questions we should be asking in the interview, because we're like, we know we need someone to do these things, but we don't, like, she's coming from business school. We don't even know what to ask. And it was such this crazy, weird, humbling moment where you're like, I don't know how to interview you. Have you guys had moments like that?
Oh, yeah, every day. Yeah.
Still.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you just learn as you go, you know? But now we know more. I mean, now you know more about what to ask. And I think it's that fearlessness that's really important when you're entrepreneurial, when you want to start a business. It's just, you've just got to go for it.
Okay. So the whole through line, you're during all of this too, you're also still styling, right?
Styling and consulting, yeah.
So how do you balance I'm not going to ask you how you balance your lives because I think that question is sexist and no one ever asks men how they balance everything.
Point. Very good point.
But I would like to know how you balance all of these different categories of work. So personal styling, consulting, you know, the Pottery Barn collaborations, the great, like how do you parcel your time out?
I mean, I really have to say the biggest challenge of in our lives is creatively having to wear different hats all day long and to have to switch gears from a baby to a teen to a very expensive jacket. And, you know, you really – that's the hardest part. And it's hard, you know, because, I mean, if you could sit down and just focus on one project, you know, it would be a lot simpler. But that is challenging. But we figure it out and we're used to it. It's like we fine-tuned the skill. But it's challenging for new people that come on too. And then when they get it, they're like – all right, I can wear the different hats all day.
I think we've really defined the Emily and Merritt brand and the great so clearly at this point that it's become easier to design into those brands as well. And that's taken a long time to define that for ourselves and for everyone that works for us.
I was going to say, do you have like a brand clinic? Did you sit down and figure out like this is the ethos, this is how it will always be? Did you create brand identities for each?
Yep.
God, that's such a long and tiring process.
And kind of never ending.
Yeah, because it always evolves.
Every opportunity that comes up, you're trying to figure out where does it go and you have to reintroduce it to aesthetics.
You've done all these collaborations. You work with all of these different players. What is something that you haven't done that you want to do, like that you're waiting? You're like, I'm just waiting for that call from blah, blah, blah.
Well, we don't wait for calls because I have to tell you, we really wanted to open a store for the great, and we are. So,
guys.
I know. And
that's amazing.
So, you know, I think we just, I mean, I love when someone calls, or is it something exciting about somebody who calls? I mean, I think that we have a list of dream partners that we'd love to partner with for the great, like Converse or some of the things that we've collected through the years. But I don't know. Is there someone specific?
Goodness.
I just think we try to make things happen.
Yeah.
So you proactively will go after the companies that you want to work with.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, that's good to know. I feel like that's not necessarily a given that sometimes like opportunity knocks, but sometimes you have to make opportunity knock.
Absolutely. I would say we pick up the phone a lot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, again, fearlessness is like this. We'll just look at each other and be like, well, what
are you going to lose?
And sometimes we get a great call and we're like, this is a great opportunity. Let's do it. But yeah.
Yeah, we have shoes out for the great now. That was on our bucket list, and we're pretty excited about that. The collection's getting bigger and broader, and by having a store now that we...
Where is the store?
It's right in West Hollywood. If anyone knows where Earth Cafe is, it's right next door.
Oh, my God, that's amazing. That's right by my office.
Yes. We call it Coffee Row right there. You can get any version of a latte. So many amazing places to come shopping.
Shop with your coffee.
So what are the problems that you're trying to figure out now? Like what keeps you up at night?
I think a couple things. I think one, empowering the women and men who work for us and helping them grow and helping our company grow. And I also just think manufacturing. I think it's a really complicated industry. We produce like around 70 to 80% of our product here in Los Angeles.
Whoa.
And you know, it's difficult. And I think that that's not exactly our skill set is the manufacturing piece of it. But we've really tried to figure it out and tried to be creative on creating product that we believe in and is within our values on how we make it. And
that's made locally.
Yeah. And helping support our community and working with our community members in different ways. I think that's been... It's been challenging for us, but we've been working really hard at it.
I'll chime in. Another thing that keeps us up at night is we do have such a full calendar of meetings and deadlines and whatnot, but we also need the space and time to kind of wander, like you said, and absorb what's happening in life. And I look back into the time when we did start Maud all those years ago and we would get our coffees in the morning and kind of go from thrift store to vintage fair to flea market and find inspiration, we have to do that version of that for us now to know what's good and what we should create. And creating time and space for that and bandwidth and the headspace for it is not an easy thing. You have to kind of protect it. And you've got to kind of tell your family you need it and your coworkers you need it and your staff you need it, because without that, you've got nothing. So I think that keeps us up at night, too.
But honestly, I look back on that time, thrifting with coffees, and it was the best time of our lives. I mean, we really discovered who we were.
So I know you guys still travel a fair amount. Is that something that's part of your process, is like going to Round Top or going to New York? Or do you have specific travel that you bake in where you're like, we need to go to Japan because we need to do X? Or is it really just carving out time here in Los Angeles?
I think it's carving out time here in Los Angeles. I mean, so much of what we're influenced by is just good old Americana charm. And yeah, Round Top, Texas is a great place to find it. Certainly a lot of places. If we were to take a road trip through America, we would, if we had the time for that, that would be epic.
I would love to do that. But I mean, we laugh sometimes that there's like this culture within design teams that you kind of like go to this far off locale and find these amazing treasures. And then your whole collection is inspired by, you know, whatever. A palm frond. And I think
from Tulum.
Yeah, exactly. But I think we really sincerely find a lot of inspiration in sort of simple things, or even like a box of rice at the grocery store could have an interesting color combination. I think you just have to be in the headspace that you're looking for it, or you're discovering something.
That inspiration is everywhere if you just look.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. I like that. So if you could go back in time, go back to 2008 and give yourselves advice back then, what would you say to yourselves?
I would say, don't take things personally. Separate emotion and work. I think we're definitely good at that now, but definitely things felt deeply personal at times.
So you learned to compartmentalize.
Absolutely, and just let things roll off you and move on.
Yeah, I think just that not one specific thing defines you, that you're a sum of a lot of parts, and that the story just keeps going. And I think I wish I could have told myself to just know that there's a lot more you could do and not to define yourself by one thing.
So for our listeners out there who have sort of like a main job and are working on their side hustle or a passion project, what advice would you give them to, you know, keep that going, or to find that inspiration, or to really take it to the next level so that maybe they can do that thing full time, or that they can do both, which is what you guys do?
Yeah, and we keep adding more side hustles. You just have to do it. You have to do it when you feel safe. And if you have a job and you have an opportunity on the side, or you want to build something on the side, do it. And you'll know when you can, it'll always be scary to stop the day job and start the project full time, but you'll know. And it's a responsible thing to do it while you have something going on the side. And it works out for so many people, so many of our friends it's worked out for.
Like you, I have a business partner and a fellow co-founder. And there are so many amazing things about working with a partner, but there are also challenges for sure. How do you guys keep things healthy between the two of you? Because I feel like a lot of young women coming up now are working with business partners, and I think it can be such a great source of, you know, creativity and comfort and burden sharing and collaboration and all of that stuff. But it also, you know, it can be hard when one person has a lot going on, the other, there are a lot of dynamics going on. So how do you guys stay healthy and stay friends?
I think we are very good communicators. We are seasoned communicators with each other. We deeply respect each other and sincerely want the other person to be happy. And when that comes from a sincere place, you are willing to share the burden, take on the burden, whatever it is, to make that person feel good and happy and productive. I think just communication. And, you know, we don't always agree on everything by any means. And we sometimes challenge each other and decision-making or a creative thing, but we really trust each other's opinions, that they're valuable enough to talk it out or throw it in the air or take a poll or whatever. I think, you know, it's a lesson we could probably learn in all of our relationships, marriages and whatnot as well. But for whatever reason, we managed to be able to do it. And at the end of the day, we laugh at something and any tension that the day has brought is gone. So, you know, after 18 years of that, you get good at it.
And we've lived a very similar. We have a lot of shared experiences. I mean, a lot. And we can just look at each other and know without a word.
We also feel like we, like you and Catherine, have a responsibility to define what female friendships are and that, you know, kind of break the mold in this world from that. And, you know, I hate to tell you the question that we get asked all the time because it's really actually terrible.
What?
Do you guys fight?
That's probably the number one question we get.
And it's like sometimes I'll be sitting at a dinner party and it's like, I feel it coming. And then it's asked. And we just laugh because you would never ask a male team that. And
true.
Ever.
That's why I don't ask you how you balance it all.
Yeah, thank you. And so I just think, you know, I don't know if it's the era we grew up in or the culture that we grew up in that girls are against each other when really we're the best allies. And so I look at my daughter and her friends and I want them to see an example of what it's like. Hey, you think your friend's awesome? Team up with her. Do something awesome together. I want that to be the conversation, not do you fight? Because I think we can do amazing things if we set that aside.
Totally. I love that. Well, ladies, thank you so much. Thank you for doing this. That was so good. I've known you forever and I know your story, but I feel like I just learned a whole bunch of new stuff. So
thank you for letting us share.
Thanks, guys. That was Emily Current and Merritt Elliott, designers, stylists, multitaskers extraordinaire. You can follow them on Instagram at Emily and Merritt, but also be sure to check out their clothing and accessories line, The Great. And be sure to shop their home line at Pottery Barn, PB Teen, and Pottery Barn Kids. Thanks for listening to this episode of Second Life. For more interviews with inspiring women like Emily and Merritt who have taken the leap to pursue their passions, visit mydomain.com. We also want to know who you'd like to hear from on the show, so feel free to shoot us an email at secondlife@mydomain.com, or you can just DM me on Instagram at Hillary Kerr. That's two L's in Hillary, two R's in Kerr. If you like the show, please be sure to subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, if you'd like to rate us and review us and say nice things and tell all your friends and put it on your social media and tag me and tag everyone, that's cool too. I mean, no pressure. I'm Hillary Kerr, and you've been listening to Second Life by MyDomain.com.